Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show. This is a hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriage issues between straight women to gay or bisexual men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments you'd like to make during this broadcast, you're free to call them in at area code 646-716-4893. Or if you're feeling radio shy, you can feel free to email me or my co-hostess tonight at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And before I introduce my co-hostess for tonight, none other than the Miss Suzette Vernon, I just want to make a couple of announcements first. I want to wish speedy recovery to our member Jen, who's gone through surgery this week. She's a hero to many of us in our support network. So, Jen, we're sending big love to you in Houston and hoping that your recovery is very speedy and you're way ahead of where you ever imagined you would be very soon. Also, in just 3 weeks from now, we're going to be having our healing weekend right outside of Washington, D.C. It's going to be the most dynamic healing weekend that I've had over the last 12 years. I'm really excited about the guests we'll be having, including the guests coming on the phone in just a moment, none other than Suzette Vernon, but we're also going to have Janine Finelli, our extraordinary health coach, and also Kathy Holquin, who will be with us in 2 weeks on the radio show the week before the conference. And so it's really all exciting that great minds and great healers are going to be meeting together and inspiring all of us. And there's still several slots that are left if you would like to join us. If you are interested, please write to me as soon as possible at bonkay@aol.com. That's bonkaye@aol.com. And in your headline, please put down Healing Weekend. and I'll be sure to get back to you as quickly as possible. So without further ado, I'm going to bring on my co-hostess for tonight, Miss Suzette Fernand. Hi, Suzette.
Hi, Bonnie. How you doing?
Good, sweetheart. How are you?
I am doing fabulous.
Good. I'm so glad you're here to brighten up my spirits of the night and of the week. Because whenever I hear your voice,
know.
I know I'm in for a good time.
Yeah, this is our first time for the new year. Hard to believe. This is our first time. Usually I'm with you January, February. Well, actually, it's been, what, 3 months maybe?
No, you were here 2 months ago, Suzette.
Oh,
you forgot.
Good.
But,
good. I was like, oh,
yeah.
My God.
Oh, no. I would never let you go that long. That would be out of the question. Sorry about that. No, you just missed 1 month.
Oh, good.
1 month you're away. And that was a tough
wow.
month in itself. But I'm very, happy that we had a fill-in for you. But I appreciate the fact that you are here tonight. But most importantly, I'm so excited about the fact that in just a few weeks, I'm going to be meeting you and getting that big in-person hug that I've been waiting for all these years.
I know, for what has it been? It's been 10 plus years. Oh, my God.
I know.
I am so excited. I am so excited. I just already know. I'm like, okay, I'm going to do the ugly cry. I already know when I see you.
Oh, that's okay. I'll do it with you. I know it's going to be so dramatic. I mean, you know, I've seen you grow. I've seen you blossom. I've seen your whole life change over the last 10 years. That you were a very determined person to change your life around, and you certainly did, and became a role model for so many of us who are in that situation, who really need to find the hope. And within 10 years, you were out of your bad, destructive marriage. You reinvented yourself. You became an author, a motivational spokeswoman, a life coach. Then you raised your son, watched him get married, and, of course, met your soulmate for life, Mr. Robert, right?
Yes. Well, just listening to you say it, I'm like, did I do all that?
This was a very busy decade for you, Suzette, right?
Oh, my God. For real?
Yep. A lot of things turned around in those 10 years, and thankfully for the better. Because you were determined, and not only that, but you helped so many people with all that you do with your books, with your music, with your coaching, with your workshops. I mean, you're always on the move, always looking to teach women how to find love again, right?
Yeah, it's hard to survive something like that and come out of it without having a purpose. You know, if you didn't have one going in, you certainly have one coming out.
And I think that's really the key to it. As far as recovery is concerned, because one of the things that I said we were going to speak about tonight was about the feminine spirit, and that's something that I'm writing on for my upcoming newsletter. That's already 3 weeks overdue, but that's okay. It'll be coming out in the next day or two. And I guess the whole thing moved me last week when I had, you know, Dr. Hooper on the phone, you know, as my once-a-month anchor man. And we were talking about some of the harm that's done to women in these marriages that's really different than when you have a straight husband. And I said, I went back to a time back in 2001 in my very second newsletter when I started a dialogue with a man who became a friend of mine, Jay, who's an attorney, when he wrote to me when he, you know, saw the work that I was doing, thanking me as a gay ex-husband. You know, that he had gone through so many trials and tribulations with his own wife. And he said in that letter, you know, and I read the letter to the, you know, on the show last week, and it kind of ended with the fact that if his, you know, he complained about his wife and how unsatisfied he was and how tightly he tried to control everything around the house because, you know, he was trying to control his own life. And where he used to complain and say things that, you know, if only she was cleaner, if only she was neater. He finally realized at the end, if only she were a man, he wouldn't be complaining like that. And,
exactly.
You know, that was his realization. But what it made me realize is I read, you know, my conclusion last week on the phone that when Jay had said those words to me, and I'll just read you those few lines that I had written because even though it was 15 years ago, and even though I said them last week, I'll read them again. because I think I'll repeat them every year. I think it's so important to understand where these marriages are different, and mm-hmm. other than, you know, when you have a straight husband. But what I said at that point was that what Jay, you know, gave me this, like, epiphany at that point, and it made me realize this, that it's true that it says, who would we be today if we had had a straight husband? How would our destinies mm-hmm. have changed if we were loved, nurtured, sexually desired with passion and tenderness, given emotional support and encouragement, and made to feel like we were part of a real couple in tune with each other's needs, wants, and aspirations? If we didn't have to spend countless hours each day wondering why we were failures as wives, women, and lovers, ripping away our self-esteem layer by layer until we became strangers unto ourselves and others? What if our husband's dishonesty and cheating didn't change us to become untrusting, suspicious, and doubting wives, forcing us to question our ability to make rational decisions? How many of us were sidetracked through those detours of deceit that diverted us from the direction that life might have taken us otherwise? Bottom line, no matter how much a gay man loves a straight woman, it's not the kind of love that fulfills the basic human need that all of us have. It can never be the kind of love that inspires the music that becomes classics or the poetry that makes the heart flutter. It is not the kind of love that can ever be returned to the degree that you are giving it. Even the best mm-hmm. of relationships are barely more than great friendships, not the passion and excitement that make us thrive and look forward to waking up each day. And even these relationships are woven with dishonesty, distrust, infidelity, resentment, and frustration. Life was not meant to be this complicated. And those were words I wrote 15, 16 years ago, and I thought, you know what, those are really good words. Because it really makes me think a lot, who would we be today when, you know, so many of our women have been in marriages for 20, 30, 40 years, and sometimes it's only with one man. You know, many of our women, you know, were virgins when they got married. They didn't have sexual mm-hmm. experiences or long dating histories. You know, they got married when they were younger. This was the only husband that they knew, and they knew from the beginning, from the early years, that something was wrong, and that gave mm-hmm. them all those years to sit and try to figure out the answer to a puzzle that they were missing, that puzzle piece, that there was no way that they would have guessed what that puzzle piece said, G-A-Y. You know, that was not something within our understanding. Why would we think our husband would be gay? So even for those men who, you know, would take responsibility and say, you know, look, you know, it's not your fault. You didn't do anything wrong. There's something wrong with me. I mean, at least they were taking some of the responsibility, but it still didn't make the wife feel any better. She still felt that if I was a better wife, if I tried harder, maybe he could feel differently, not knowing what mm-hmm. the real problem was. And so we sexually, you know, become, I call us sexual mutants, you know, at that point. Because, you know, you're not going to get any, so you don't want to have to keep asking for it or else it feels degrading. So we just turn off that feminine spirit within us. And I really feel, Suzette, that that feminine spirit is a God-given kind of spirit that we're all born with as women.
Yes, I agree. I totally agree.
And you work a lot with that, so maybe you can talk a little bit about that.
I'd love to. And it's really funny, Bonnie, because last week, March the 26th, I think it was the fourth session of my Enough virtual workshop, and the very first topic of discussion was powerful femininity. That was what we talked about, and I think one of the things that I felt compelled to do was to define it, because I think it gets misconstrued with the strong woman ideal, because a lot of women say, well, the reason why the reason he left is because I was a strong woman. I was intimidating. I was these things, you know, he was a weak man because, you know, most men don't like strong women. You know, you hear all these different reasons and adages and whatever that make women feel good when the fact is they have not been strong women at all. They've been defensive. They've been demeaning. They've been derogatory, they've been condescending, and even if they've done it with a smile and a wink, that same spirit it you can't miss it. And so for me, I felt like the best way of defining feminine power or the feminine spirit was to give attributes, not so much a definition, but to be able to say, well, what is a feminine attribute? Is it crying when you see romantic comedies, you know, or is it, you know, trying to talk in the boardroom and getting all choked up while, you know, your male colleagues are looking at you like, oh, that's just a woman for you? No, it goes deeper than that. It is our ability to be empathetic. It's our compassion. It's our ability to be resourceful and creative. If a man would be the structure of a house, we are the heart that fills the house. We're poised and we're genuine and we're kind and we're confident and we're influential. We're warm and we're multifaceted and we're gracious and we're productive and we're smart. We're affectionate, you know, and we hold our men accountable. All that is part of being feminine, and it's all that is part of being powerful. We know how to be kind. You know, we can be kind without being walked over.
And I think those are all good feminine qualities, but I was talking more in the line of, when I say feminine spirit, I mean without being too downright, you know, descriptive, but I am talking about sexually. And, you know, I think that as women, you know, we're socialized to fall in love and to be compassionate and empathetic. But then there comes a time in our life that, you know, you have that chemistry with someone, and you feel that lust for someone, for lack of a better word. You know, you want to be with that man. You know, that when that man touches you, you know, your world shakes. You know, you can't wait to be intimate with that person. And it's not just a physical intimacy. It's also an intimate connection, emotional connection with the person. I mean, look, there are women who can just have raw sex, and it can still be a great experience. Trust me, I know. I've done it, been there. You know, I didn't have to be in love with somebody to have a great sexual experience. But when you have it all, that's the best sexual experience. When you have the closeness and the emotional intimacy and the physical intimacy, this is, to me, a gift that all women are blessed with when they're born, the potential to have this. And we go into these relationships equating love and equating sex and equating all the romantic movies that we've seen. And, you know, it's just like some of these men tell their wives, well, you know, what do you think? Life is like a big, you know, a Hallmark movie. Why do you have to act like you're 16 years old? You know, that's how they shut you down, by making you feel that there's something wrong with you for wanting what's perfectly natural. And they come up with a million excuses why, you know, they're not going to be sleeping with you. So I really do believe that that kind of behavior towards women is so defeating to them that they really lose that feeling. And what hurts me so much is that when I see women who have given up 30, 35, 40 years of their life living like this, and now their marriage is over, they don't have any desire whatsoever to find somebody to start it over with, because they say that I can't trust again, I can't love again. And that's not to say that they won't, but in a lot of cases they won't even try, and they don't even know what happened to that feminine spirit because they never had it developed. It was stunted at an early stage and buried.
And you know,
and
what,
I just feel so angry over that.
I'm with you. I'm totally with you. I think, you know, I don't know how all women are. I'm sure they are accepted to every rule, but a lot of times I think one of the things that happens when we're growing up is we're not taught that our sexuality is something to be celebrated. We're taught that our sexuality is something to be hidden, to be shut down. You know, bad girls do, good girls don't. And then when we, and it's funny how that's internalized, and we don't realize how internalized it is until we find ourselves married to someone who is a manifestation of our belief that sexuality is wrong, because that is, person doesn't touch us, or if they do touch us, they have to control it. We can't be flirty. We can't be sexy. We can't swing from the light fixtures. We can't be loud. You know, we can't initiate. All those things are viewed as being aggressive. But but no, they are fiercely feminine.
And I agree. I think that women don't realize that that's part of being feminine.
Exactly. And I think it starts long before we married our gay husband. I think it started long before, because it's funny, when you talk to a woman who is confident in her sexuality and dated or whatever, had relationships with men where she remained confident and remained, had a standard, a value of herself as a sexual being, that woman does not get deceived as quickly or as easily. And most of the women I know, very seldom have any of them said, "Girl, I married a gay man." No, because they recognize that anybody who makes them feel shut down, something's wrong. They know that.
I don't know. I think it's hard to say, because I see them as beautiful women, you know, who are physically beautiful, of course, emotionally beautiful, inside beautiful. They look like Barbie dolls to me. And they're just as shut down as I was, you know, and they had sexual experience before, too. I think that we can learn how to doubt ourselves as women when a man you're living with and who supposedly loves you starts making you doubt yourself. And it's like a slow deterioration. It's kind of like when you talk about women who live in abusive relationships that are physically abusive. And, you know, people say, well, they must want it. They must be asking for it, because why would they stay there? You know, they minimize how deep those scars are and how big those fears become when you're living with somebody who's physically abusive. And I'm very embarrassed to say I used to think like that also, until I really learned about it and studied it, you know, as I got older. I used to think, well, why would somebody stay with somebody who's smacking them and giving them, you know, black eyes and bruising them? You know, there must be something wrong with them. Well, yeah, there is something wrong with them, that they're so beaten down. But it's almost when the person you're married to, if he's physically abusive, when you first meet him and start dating him, he doesn't act like that. It's not like he takes you out on your first date and says, "I've had a very nice time," and smacks you in the face. If he did, chances are you're really not going to go out with him next time. You know, these guys are charming. They know how to make you fall for them. They know all the little tricks in making you, you know, feel like you're the most special person in the world. And it's over a period of time that they get you into their, you know, cast their spell and get you into a position where the first time it happens and they're crying to you, "Oh, honey, I don't know why I did that. I'm so sorry. I promise it's never going to happen again. You know how much I love you." And they shower you with a, you know, nice gift or something, take you out for dinner and love you and reassure you before, you know, it takes a while, and then it'll happen a second time and a third time. But by that time, you start feeling, well, I must have done something to deserve it. And I think that with us, the more we're given these messages as women, "You must have done something to deserve me not touching you. There must be something wrong with you if I'm not touching you. You know, I don't want to be mean and tell you what it is. Can't you figure out what's wrong with you?" I think these are the messages that we're getting. And even if we had a sexual experience in the past, which I had plenty before my gay husband, and not to brag, it's not a bragging thing, I'm not proud of it, but I had it. And so I just, you know, take the responsibility for it. So it's not that I didn't know. I didn't, maybe I thought something was off, but I didn't think it was gay. Not in the beginning. I thought it was me.
I got you.
Especially when he told me that no woman's ever complained before you.
Yeah, I just know a lot of my girlfriends were telling me when I was describing my ex, they were like, "Girl, clearly he was gay."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, okay, maybe it's because there was a certain naivete that I had, because I did not have a lot of experience with men.
Mm-hmm.
I don't mean just having sex with men, but I just didn't have, I wasn't free to explore a lot of things where men were concerned. And I think even deeper than that was not knowing my worth as a woman. And so, because most of the women that I know that are confident, and it doesn't even matter whether they're gorgeous or Barbie dolls or not, there are some very plain-looking women, very homely-looking women that still are very, very confident. And they don't take BS. They just really, really don't, and they're confident in themselves. Not that they dismiss men, but they it's like they have a sense about themselves in a way that they don't second-guess themselves the way I do it.
Me too.
There's some things that are settled in them. And I think even if a person like that married somebody and found out they were gay, it would be hard for me to think that a person that confident would stay in that situation.
Well, I think it depends when they find out that they're gay. You know, I think if it's a slow meltdown over a period of years where you're just, you know, starting to feel like there's nothing that you're doing right and you lose who you are. I know that in my marriage, and it was a short marriage to my, you know, ex-husband who was gay. You know, I had my children with him and everything, but relatively short next to everybody else's. You know, but I saw how I lost totally who I was. That whoever I was going into the marriage was not who I was when I came out of that marriage. Because, you know, I lost who I was in those years, you know, thinking that I wasn't good enough. And I think sex has so much to do with that, that if you feel so, you know, sexually inadequate, I mean, that's something that we're supposed to be blessed with, our sexuality. And here's someone giving us the messages that, you know, why do you keep, you know, you're just not good enough for me. Why do you keep bothering me? What's wrong with you? Are you a nymphomaniac? You know, I don't want to be with you. Turning, and then that's the sexual end, but then you have the intimate end. You know, they don't want to hold you. They don't want to comfort you. You know, this is intimacy that straight couples build up. And one of the things I write about in this newsletter that I'm doing now is that one thing I hate when people say, yeah, well, straight people don't have sex after a while either. Why are you making it? It's just like a gay person. Do you have people telling you that?
Don't you hate that? Well, you know, the older you get, sex goes anyway. It's more important about companionship when you get older. It's more important. Well, the thing about it is, even if you can't do it the way you did it when you were 20 and 30, you still want that energy. You still want that sparkle in his eyes. You still want that sexual energy to be present, even if you're not doing it as often. Still
or like you say, even if you have to modify how you're doing it as you get older. It doesn't mean that you stop doing it.
You still want him to look at you like he could sop you up like a biscuit. You know, you still want that.
Right. I mean, you know, I'm old. My boyfriend's even older. We're together over 22 years. And still a wondrous, experience for us all, you know, on a regular basis. So, I mean, you can't make it, like, just because people have been together, you know, but my problem is not with that. It's when you're only in your 20s or your 30s or your 40s when you're at your sexual peak and you're being told there's something abnormal about you.
Yeah.
I mean, that really takes away from who you are as a woman. You know, you can wear the sexiest nightgown, put on the, you know, greatest. I don't know if you had that experience when you were married.
Oh, honey, after a while I said, but there's no reason to even try it. I tried it in the beginning. But then I realized, okay, this is not going to make him turn down anyway. So I stopped and started wearing T-shirts and whatever to be. It was like there was no reason. Nothing got a rise out of him. So I thought, well, I stopped trying.
Did you ever feel it was you?
I did. I thought it was me. And I think the biggest fallout for me is over time I started feeling old. I started feeling old and uninspired, like I was drying up. Life didn't have the same luster. It was like I couldn't one foot in front of the other, and sure, we had business, and thank God we did have business, because that brought excitement. But as far as our relationship, it just got old hat. You know, it didn't make any difference to go out on a date. Why? There was no chemistry. There was nothing there. We talk about other people and things like that, trying to make it seem like he was trying to recapture something. But it was nothing. It was so underwhelming that when I come back home, I cry myself to sleep because, like, we went out on a date, but it felt like there was nothing happened.
No, and I can't begin to tell you how many nights I used to cry myself to sleep also. And, you know, my ex-husband would, you know, be sleeping in a deep sleep, and I would be sitting there crying, and he wouldn't even notice, of course, because he was sleeping. He was in a deep sleep. He was happy. You know, he had nothing to feel unhappy about. You know, he didn't have to have sex with me. I was the one who was crying. You know, and I know so many of our women feel the same pain because they tell me. how many nights they went to bed crying and thinking something was wrong with them. Mm-hmm. But the worst gay husbands are the ones that tell the wives, I'm not having sex with you because there's something wrong with you. And that's the one that really hurt me. Like, I had one woman one time who was a wonderful woman, and she said, yes. He said, how could you expect me to sleep with you? Your breath is so bad. And she said, you know, I went to dentist. I went and have all kinds of treatments. She said, I would always, you know, want to use mouthwash. She said, nobody else seemed to have a problem with my breath except him. But he made me believe that, you know, it was repelling to him, so I just stopped asking. Yeah. Or when they give other reasons, you smell down there, your body smells, and, you know, you get such a complex, and you try scrubbing yourself and washing yourself, and you think, uh-oh, there must be something really wrong with me, and women really end up believing this because they're told it constantly. And that's the message with sexual rejection.
You know, something, Bonnie, as you're talking about it, I was remembering. Even early in my marriage, and I'd only been married a year and maybe 3 months, but there's still times I get flashbacks, and I'll be extra careful, like, oh, God, you know, maybe I don't smell right. I'll do extra stuff because I don't want to turn my now husband off. And he's like, no, I don't smell any. He's like, you smell great. You smell wonderful. He doesn't have the hang-ups. I'm like, oh, Lord, these armpits could hold a bank. And it's like, it's almost as if he's like, I don't care. Bring your little stinky armpits right on over here, girl. You know, it's like, it's nothing that makes him pull away from me. Nothing.
Exactly. And even me with my weight issue, which has been my chronic battle my whole entire life, and of course I've never won it, but I'm always fighting it. But, you know, when I started going with my boyfriend, I was at least, just, you know, 40 pounds lighter than I am now. And, you know, now I'm 40 pounds more or 50 pounds more than before. And, you know, I say to him, oh, my God, I can't stand myself. I said, don't you notice? And he says, no. He says, just more of you to love. You know, when somebody truly loves you and wants you, that's how they react to you. They're not noticing the little things. They're not looking to find fault with you and reasons why they don't want to have sex with you.
Exactly.
Right?
I think you said a major thing. There's no reason for them to find fault and find reason. When a person loves you, they don't spend their time finding fault with you. They hold you in the best possible light that they can because they don't have anything. They don't have any other agenda.
Right. They're not looking for reasons not to be with you, where a gay man is looking for every reason that he doesn't want to be with you. And it doesn't take much for him to come up with one of these reasons instead of just coming out and saying, there's something wrong with me. I'm so sorry. I have a problem with erectile dysfunction. Say anything, but don't turn it on the women and make it like there's something wrong with you. Because what you're doing is stealing from your wife. You know, this is the woman you promised to love and cherish and take care of. And you're doing all the wrong things, and yet you can't find it in your heart to say, you know, that I have to do the right thing by her. Like, it just really upsets me. You know, there has to be accountability somewhere. And, you know, I know that I'm under attack a lot, you know, from a few people in the gay community. Yep, and this week the trans community was attacking me, and the bisexual community was twittering on me, you know, saying how I'm there to break up marriages. You know, I'm not there to break up any marriage. I'm there for women who are in pain because they have husbands who aren't being honest with their wives. And I think it's all about honesty. You know, if a woman chooses to live in a situation where she has a husband who's gay, bisexual, asexual, confused sexual, transsexual, metrosexual, whatever sexual that's not heterosexual, then she doesn't need to come to me. If she's satisfied living like that, I'm not for women who want to stay in marriages and figure it out. I'm for women who are unhappy living in these marriages, and it's time to move on to rescue yourself. And my proof of the importance of that is looking at someone like you, who was able to start her life over again and find true love and what, you know, loving a man is really about when he's a straight man who treats you like a partner, right?
Oh, yeah. And the thing about it, unless I had left that husband, I would have never known it. I would have never, I would have stayed with that same belief that this is as good as it's going to ever get for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like the ladies who are listening, you deserve better than that. You deserve better than to go through this whole privilege of living on this earth, accepting something less than what you really deserve.
You're settling.
You owe yourself more than that. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You owe yourself so much more than that. And it's out there. You know, it may not be in the form of a man, but certainly your own self-worth and self-value is just as much worth it. The recovery of your own soul is really worth it. It really is. Your joy. I didn't even know what joy felt like. I knew how to be, you know, happy and something happened. But that abiding joy, feeling inspired and joyful and feeling youthful and exuberant and excited about life and having vitality, having your feminine spirit reclaimed, which is all part of it, and your fire and your passion and just all of that makes you uniquely feminine. You deserve to have it.
You have to enjoy learning how to be a female, and when that's taken away from you and you're made to feel as if you have no sexuality at all, and so many women then learn how to just stun it, you know, beat it down. And sometimes it just never comes back. And that's not to say, and I'd just like to be really clear, you don't have to find a man to make you complete. Please don't think that I'm saying that. You know,
yeah,
you can. I know some of our women just love being on their own, and that's fine. You know, loving yourself is the best love of all. And if you're looking for a relationship, it should be not because you need one, but because you want one. But you should be happy with yourself first, because otherwise you're never going to be happy in any relationship. But my point is that for those women who were thinking, look, I spent 30 years with a gay man, I'd really like to spend some good years that I have left with a straight man, but they just feel so afraid, and they're afraid of that rejection. I know when I started out again, I was celibate for 11 years after my marriage, and I was very happy during that time. I didn't want to get involved. But one day my heart opened up again, and I wanted somebody in my life, but I was so scared. And I think these women are scared because they haven't really had a sexual experience. Did you feel that way too?
Oh, girl. Well, at first, honestly, I was so happy to get out of all the chaos and the drama.
Mm-hmm.
I was so upset till, you know, being sexual was the last thing on my mind. I was just like, I just want to get out of this. This is about to drive me crazy. And I'm ready for some peace of mind and peace in my life. But then after a while, it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I just had this insatiable desire to be sexual. I started feeling like, my God, I've been cheated all these years. And it was like it just came back with a vengeance, just like I was due. I owed it to myself to have sex with someone. But the beautiful thing about it, I felt that way, and there was a certain degree, I think, of desperation because I had not had it in a while. I'm just grateful that I was around men that didn't hurt me. You know, I think I was kind of lucky because at that time I was just really raw, and I hadn't done any real soul work or any real work on myself except for enough confidence to leave. But as far as my self-esteem and all of that, and I had not really rebuilt it, and then I was struggling because I felt like, you know, Lord, here I am trying to serve you, and I'm hot. You know, I'm hot as a jalapeno. If anybody touches me, I think I'm going to jump them, you know, and I was feeling a lot of guilt around that. And I prayed a lot, Bonnie. I really did, because I felt like I was losing control. That I wanted it so bad I was losing control. And I was praying and praying and praying and praying. And I said, Lord, if you're not going to help me, you know, if you're not going to help, you know, tame this savage beast inside of me. One thing I beg of you, just don't let somebody else hurt me and humiliate me the way my husband
mm-hmm.
did, because if they do, I won't be able to make it. If they do, I will not survive it. I said, so, you know, I'm feeling raw. I can't control myself right now. Just let who you let get close to me. Just don't let this person reject me. Just don't let this person hurt me. And honest, the truth, the person that I got involved with did not hurt me. He really did not. What he did was it gave me permission to be sexual without any excuse.
Uh-huh.
It gave me permission to be sexual with no excuses. I mean, it was like however, whenever. He was ready, willing, and able. And what ended up happening was instead of it turning me out or making me, you know, a nympho or making me desperate and I had this insatiable, lustful, addictive sexual, it didn't do any of that. What it ended up doing, because I gave myself permission, after a while I got back in balance. It was like because in my marriage I was so to the extreme of no sex, or if I did have it, I was always worried about, am I going to ever have it again? Then I went to the extreme of having it whenever I wanted to and just giving myself permission to do it however, whenever, with this man. And after a while, I got my sense of balance. Now, I don't recommend this for everybody, but for my journey, for my evolution, to help get me back, this is what happened with me. And after a while, I got my balance back, and after a while, I didn't need what I needed from him anymore. And I was able to say, you know what? I want to be sexual, but I don't have to be a slave to sex. I don't have to be a slave to it. I now know that I can be in a sexual relationship without losing who I am.
Uh-huh.
And it's like it just brought me to a place where I was able to really date with more confidence than I had before.
So it was a good starter relationship, right?
Yeah, it gave me confidence that somebody would want me. And I think that was what
uh-huh.
I needed to know. In my femininity, I needed to know that somebody wanted this, that I didn't have to beg them, I didn't have to bargain with them, I didn't have to do any of these other things. They just wanted it. And he was very joyful at my experience of it. He never shamed me. He never made me feel bad about it. It was like, go on, girl. Get yours. Do your thing. You know? And that's the way it felt. And it was affirming in a way that allowed me to say, you know what? I'm okay. If I was to wash the residue out of my skin of feeling like it was my fault. It really did.
And I think that's why
so,
it's so important to have relationships that are sexual when the time is right, not to jump into them right after the marriage. You have to heal yourself first, because otherwise we're so needy emotionally, and we tie that in with sexually, and it's certainly understandable out of coming from one of these marriages where you're lacking in almost every, you know, aspect of having any kind of intimacy on an emotional level, on a physical level, on any level. And so you feel very desperate to, you know, want to feel like you're normal, so you just jump and do things that you usually regret later on. And that's not to discourage anyone, but like with any other recovery, you have to first recover a little bit, rebuild who you are, and then it's fine to go out and have somebody to have fun with, have a starter relationship, go out and remember what it's like to have, or learn what it's like to have great sex, to feel like a woman. I mean, I've met women who are in their 50s and 60s who were married for 25, 30, 40 years who never had another partner. And then they went out and maybe it didn't last forever. Maybe it was just for, you know, a few times. But they finally understood what everybody talked about when they were talking about how wonderful sex could be. Because before that, they certainly had no clue.
Exactly. And I think if the ladies out there are wanting to do that, those who are at that point in their relationships with themselves, then, like I said, I kind of jumped into it, and thank God, you know, the Lord kept me from drowning. But I think in hindsight, it would have been more affirming of myself and more safe if I had had someone to coach me or counsel me as I was going through it. Because, you know, a lot of times you have a whole rush of feelings, but you need someone to bring some context to your feelings, someone to be an accountability partner to kind of be a gauge for you so that if something starts happening and the guy starts saying different things, somebody who can challenge, you know, his treatment of you or can help you with having standards and having boundaries and that kind of thing. And so I think if anybody is thinking about doing that, it's very important that they have somebody who can be a voice of healthy liberation that can help them to be able to navigate the different feelings that they'll feel without feeling desperate or without losing their sensibility.
Listen, would you be good enough, Suzette, could you give women some hints on how to start rebuilding this? You know, when you come out of these marriages and you have no femininity or no feminine spirit left, can you give some ideas?
Well, I really believe that three things at least. One is acknowledge. I think you have to acknowledge that what's happened to you, and you have to more than just acknowledge that your husband was gay. It goes deeper. It's acknowledging what part you played, not so much in the dissolution of the marriage or not the part you played, like, you know, it's my fault that he was gay, none of that kind of stuff. That's not healthy. But the part you played in staying that long with him, the reasons that you gave yourself, the way you justified it, and to take ownership that was not taking good care of yourself. Acknowledge that's the part you played. If you went along with it for whatever reason, that was a part you played, and you have to first acknowledge that. You know, because even if somebody hurt you, you're the one that chose to stay. You know, and even if there is a wound that has been in your heart, unless you're doing something to help get your wound healed, you have to take responsibility for the years that you allowed your heart to bleed. That you have to take responsibility for, because nobody held a gun to your head. So I think acknowledging is very, very important. And once you acknowledge the part you played, then I think it brings you to a point where you can acknowledge that you're not a victim, that you do have choices. It might not be perfect choices. They might be hard choices, but you do have choices. And that you're not a victim. And even if you felt like one before, because you have the power to choose, you are not a victim. And so acknowledge is really, really, really big. And to acknowledge that you are not at fault, you know, if the relationship ended, to acknowledge that all relationships are going to end one way or the other, whether it's going to end in death or whatever. Every relationship that we have on this planet is going to end in some way, shape, or form. What's most important is how you're going to spend your time in that relationship or who you're going to spend it with. So acknowledge is really big. Then I think, secondly, after you've done the work with working through acknowledge, you know, like with a relationship coach, with a reading or whatever, really getting down and getting honest, as honest as you can, about acknowledging the part you played and acknowledging that you have a choice and acknowledging that relationships end, but that you can determine how you're going to spend your relationships going forward. And then to release the blame, the shame, and the fear. And that's not something that comes easy. It takes work to release it. It takes detaching from that old physicality, detaching from that gay husband, detaching from that relationship. There's no way you can release and stay tied to a gay husband. I think releasing is detaching physically first, and then it takes some time, it takes work to detach emotionally, socially, spiritually, because you're attached in so many parts and facets of your life, you're attached. And so it takes time to break those different cords of attachment to that life you had with them, to your expectations, to what you were hoping for, to what you lost, to what he did to you, to how he hurt you, that at some point part of releasing is you got to detach yourself and not be defined by that situation in your life. And also part of releasing is detoxing, getting rid of the toxins, getting rid of the stinking thinking that the label gave you, you know, what you began to believe about yourself. You got to detox from all of that because none of it's true. So putting yourself in a place where you can really detox from the toxins, the wrong thoughts, the erroneous beliefs, the self-limiting beliefs, and then you got to replace it. Because whenever you detox, what you put in your body next after detoxing is just as important. Because if you keep going, if you put the same things back in your body or in your mind or in your spirit, that's what you're going to continue to get. So you have to change what you eat, what you receive, what you take in about yourself. You have to change what you read, how you know, who you're around and what they tell you about yourself so that you can renew your mind with truth. The truth is, yes, I went through this, but I'm not defined by it. I am still the same person even though I went through it. When I look at myself in the mirror, I still have two eyes. I still have hair, hopefully, on my head. I still look the same. Nothing that I came with as far as my makeup of who I am and my value was changed by how this person chose to act. That was totally their decision. That was totally their responsibility, how they chose to act. But it wasn't because of me. I might have triggered some pain in them that caused them to react as they did. But all I did was trigger it. I am not at fault. They came into this with their proclivities and their and whatever issues that they brought into the relationship. They had that before me. So I'm not defined by that. I am still the same person. What I have to do is get back to happy. But I am not compromised by a decision that somebody else chooses to make. So it's renewing your mind and your spirit, sometimes mantras and positive reading and getting in a space where you're hearing something different. And sometimes it takes a lot of hearing it until you start believing. Because you know, really, what you hear a lot of, after a while it gets inside of you. If you keep being around people that think that you're wonderful, if you keep reading books that talk about healthy emotions and challenging those things, and if there were addictions in your household growing up or you were an adult child of an alcoholic, and you start reading these books that tell you what's healthy versus what's not healthy, the more truth and help you get around, it's going to start changing how you think. So I think...
And I think changing your thought patterns is so important because of the fact that, you know, for so long we've been told, you know, all negative messages, and now it's time for you to start believing in your own messages, you know, about you. And, you know, if you want to, you can find your feminine spirit again. You know, it's just been, you know, stamped on and packed away, so to speak.
That's the beauty of the human spirit. It's more resilient than we think. It's just like anything else, like a flower. You know, there's some flowers that you can put in one particular kind of soil. They don't bloom. But if you put them in the right soil, you don't have to tell them what to do. They're going to bloom naturally. And so I think for a lot of these women who have been in abusive relationships with gay husbands, we have been in the wrong soil. And so we have to plant ourselves in the right soil. And what's the truth? The truth is, yeah, I went through a lot, but I'm still here. The truth is, yeah, this might happen, but guess what? I was able to think enough to go to work. I was able to think enough to to respond to my child to fix dinner for him. I was cognizant enough to go get help. You know, it's like you start telling yourself the truth. The truth is I am here. And I might have lost some things, but if I put myself in the right soil, if I start nurturing my roots with the truth, I may not see anything in the beginning, but if I keep nurturing my roots with the truth, after a while it's going to stick. Because I have to tell you, Bonnie, had it not been for books, before I was able to really talk about anything, I was reading about stuff that helped me to find out how healthy people are. First, it was how to reclaim my own spirit, my own sense of value, the different things that I brought into my relationship and my upbringing. I started working on that, and then as I got to a certain place of working on that and became more understanding of why I was the way I was and why I responded the way I was, then I was able to start reading books about men. But I had to first get clear about me. Then I was able to start reading books about relationships and what's healthy. And then I had enough of esteem that I could read it and hear it with a clearer mind.
Mm-hmm.
If I had to start reading it right out the gate. Because there are a lot of things about ourselves that affect what we read and how we take it in. So we have to first get a certain sense of confidence and clarity and wholeness about ourselves. Then we can start talking about men and how we should be treated and how a straight man responds when he loves and all these kinds of things. And so I think it is layered. Acknowledge, release, renew.
That's beautiful. I just want to tell you one of the things that my friend Maureen had, you know, sent me a posting that I think kind of sums it up. And it says, make sure you don't start seeing yourself through the eyes of those who don't value you. Know your worth, even if they don't. Right?
Yeah.
I'm going to send you this.
Yeah.
It's really nice. But, you know, I think that's it. We have to see ourselves through our eyes, not through all those negative messages that have been given to us all these years by people who themselves are not, you know, there's something wrong with them. And that will affect you for, you know, the rest of your life, because once again, if it's not a gay husband, there's lots of men out there who are just not the right men for you. And you don't want to have to find yourself in another relationship with somebody not worthy of you. You have to really learn how to love yourself first. So, Suzette,
exactly.
We're coming to the end of our show, and let's let people know how to reach you. I know. Didn't it go fast?
It went fast.
I know. We blinked our eyes, and it's gone. But you can reach Suzette. Tell them your contact information. Get your pencils ready. Go ahead, Suzette.
Get it ready, y'all. www.suzette, that's S-U-Z as in zebra, E-T-T-E, Viernon, Z as in victory, ArnoN.com. So that's www.suzetteviernon.com. It's the way to reach it.
Okay, and if not, you can always look on my website or write to me for Suzette's contact information. And for those of you who are lucky enough to be coming to our healing weekend, when I'm finished hugging Suzette, which is going to take time, then she can give you a hug. How's that? So, Suzette, thank you so much, and I'm so excited. And 3 weekends from now, I'm going to be giving you that big hug in person. What a momentous moment. You're
going to
have the best weekend that you can imagine that weekend.
Oh, I am so excited about it. I am so excited about it. Yay!
I know. And next week, I'm going to have somebody who's really wonderful come back to our show, Dr. Margalis Bielstad. She has the book, Stop Caretaking, the Borderline, you know, Narcissistic Personality. And she's really a family therapist who's wonderful, telling you good steps on how to move away from these guys who are always trying to control you, even after the marriage is long over. That's what I did for a lot of years. She gave me some really good advice. So I love all of you out there. Love to you, Suzette. I'll be seeing you in just a few weeks. And you have a wonderful week. All right. Have a great week.
All right. Night, everybody.
Bye to everybody. Love to all of you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.